originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. Thank you to everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have given everything to the sport. Please, if you're able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. Our guest tonight is cleaning up the Oaklawn meet so far with 10 victories from 47 starts, including a $119 winner. He's a native of Mexico, moved to the U.S. at the young age of 14, and he was the champion apprentice jockey at the 2014 Lone Star Park meet. With 671 wins and over $11 million in earnings and counting, it's a pleasure to introduce jockey David Cabrera. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you.
Doing great here, David, and can't wait to hear your story. I've been watching the races at Oaklawn, and I've been thinking, who is this David? He's just killing them, and I love it. Great to see a new face to the meet, and how do you like it there so far?
You know, I always think about this place when they say Oaklawn Park. I always, in my plan to come over here for a long, long time, you know, and now I got the opportunity, and I tell you what, there is a nice little town. I like it. It's like a small town, and it's beautiful, and the racing, I mean, people love racing over here, and, you know, I like it, you know, I like it that a lot of people come down there, and I sure like it. I like everything about this town and this place. I'm so glad I came over here, and I sure do like it.
I've talked to a few others about Oaklawn, David, and so many riders say the same thing, how the town is so great. And I hear that brings out a pretty good crowd to the races every day.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, every time I'm there, I sense like the paddock is full, no matter what day it is. No matter, I think we had like a little rainy day and other days that they were kind of cold, you know. And it's amazing how many people comes to the races. And you know what it gets me? It's like a little small town. And I'm like, man, it's a lot of people there, you know. Sometimes I'm like, man, I can't believe this little town has that many people, you know.
Love to see the people get excited about our sport, David. I've never been to Oaklawn, but it's definitely on my bucket list. And what was it like when you first arrived? It's a little bit of an intimidating jockey colony there right now. You have the likes of Gary Stevens, and I mean, the list goes on, Ramon Vasquez, John Court. What was it like for you when you first arrived? Were you, did you know very many of the other riders there, or were you a bit intimidated? What were you thinking?
You know, I don't think to be honest, I never been intimidated. I always, one thing about me, I love to ride. I don't mind what the odds of the horse are, you know. I always, once I get on a horse and I sit on it, I mean, I just get to feeling comfortable. I know there's some big riders out there, you know, and it makes it tough, you know. It makes it tough because when you get down the stretch, you know, and you have like are really tough. Yaki, you know, it can be really you can get really to work to pay somebody else, you know. But if I know it's like a lot of like what big names, Mr. Gary Stevens, you know, a great writer, you know. But I like to be intimidated. I don't think I ever feel intimidated. I like the competition, you know. And like I say, once I sit on a horse, it's just like, I just like it. It's just an amazing feeling for me. And they just, if I even think about it, I don't know how to explain it, you know. But I sure love it.
What first brought you to Oakland, David? Was it your agent, Jose Santos? Or how did you decide to, why did you decide to make the move?
You know, for a long time, I always think about being ready. You know, I always think about when I went to Remington, I spent a long time over here in Texas, you know, and then I feel like I wanted it, you know, and Texas with that man, Remington, it seems like it was a big step. So we came over to Remington, and thanks God we did good. And I wanted to come to Oakland this year, but, you know, I feel like I wasn't ready, you know, for, like, to compete there, you know. I feel like I need to still learn a lot of experience because when I came to Remington, I learned a lot. So I was feeling like I wasn't ready. So I got to Perry Metals last year and then do the Remington meet. And then I feel like, okay, it's time for me to take the next step. And I'm so glad I did. And, yes, when I talked to Jose, you know, he's a great agent, you know. I think it's probably the youngest agent, the series right now on a horse racing that I know, to be honest, you know. He's so young, but he's so smart, you know. And a lot of people talk about him, you know. And I was like, man, I think he'd be a good combination, you know, me and him. And it seems like he worked out really good. He got me into the Moquette stable, you know, and a few of his clients. And so far he's been working out just great. It's wonderful.
What is it, David, that makes a good agent?
You know, I every agent that I have, I have liked him a lot. I had two agents before. I only had two agents. He's my third agent, you know. And to be honest, you know, this guy is like, he's been on a racetrack since he was young. I think being a son of a writer, I mean, and the willing to work every day. You know, this guy sounds like he gets up in the morning and loves his job, you know. And also, he studies the horses so much. I mean, it sounds like if you ask him about a race, there's going to be racing like in about 3 weeks, you already know pretty much what horses are going to go in it. I mean, this guy is like on top of the game, you know. Everybody likes him. He's got a good attitude, you know. And I think it's the main thing. And he's so willing to work and so hungry to win, you know, that that's what makes him a good agent, I think. He's, I tell you what, for as young as he is, he really did surprise me.
David, how hard do you have to work in the morning, especially you're new here to Oakland? Are you going out there every morning and really hustling now?
You know, for the first few days, I don't know if you hear, but we had the track closed for quite a few days. But right before Christmas, I thought, you know, since I'm going to be new there, I need to, we finished in Remington the 17th, and I packed up everything and left, and by the 20th, I was there, you know. I got my apartment ready, and I thought, you know, we need a hustle, we need work. And I think people saw that, you know. And right now, it's not as many workers as it was early on the meet. Right now, it's a little more light, you know. But to me, getting up every morning, as long as I'm there, you know, because right now I had to make a trip to Houston, and my family is here in San Antonio, so I came and spent a couple of days with them. And now I'm leaving. Right now I'm fixing the lift over there to head to Hot Springs to be in the morning over there. But to me, just getting up every morning, you know, it's just like a pleasure. It ain't like a job, you know. Once you get on a horse and you like it, I mean, it's just something else. You can ask for a better morning than that, you know. Doing whatever what you love to do, it ain't a job. So every morning I get up, and if they got horses, man, I be so welcome to take them. I mean, for me, work is nothing. I mean, it's a pleasure for me. Having work in the mornings, you know, that means business, and I love it. It's just that just keeps me going, and I love to work. To me, working, I don't mind working.
Is that hard for you, David, if your family's in Texas? Is it hard for you to be away from them?
This is the first time that I had to, my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, they live here in San Antonio, and I travel with them everywhere I go. And, you know, moving, it can be a little difficult, especially if we got a baby and for her to get used to everywhere we go, it can be a little something else, you know. And plus, if I'm going to be riding there, and I'll probably try to ride a little bit in Claremore too, you know, that's going to be taking a lot of time. And to be leaving my wife in Oakland, we don't know nobody there, you know. We got there, we didn't know nobody. And it kind of be hard for her, so I decided to leave him over here in San Antonio with my mother-in-law and my father-in-law over here. They got a house, so that way she won't feel alone, you know. And for being the first time, it is pretty hard, you know. It is, you go every day to your house and you're there by yourself, you know. And it's pretty difficult. I talk to them on the phone, you know, which that makes me happy. But, you know, just by thinking about them, it's just like an extra kick, you know, for like, man, I can be like missing them, you know. I need to just like try to do my best, you know. And they always, I don't know how to say this word. My English is a little bit short sometimes. But man, they always encourage me to like do the best, you know. Just talking to my wife, the words that she tells me, you know, listen to my kid. They just puts me like, man, it puts me on a good move, and I'm like, man, you know, and for sure, if I'm not here for myself, for sure, no matter what, I always try my best, and right now I'm like really trying extra hard, especially not being with them, you know. It's a little difficult. It's okay, you know. It's okay.
Well, David, I'm sure they are so proud of you right now and all the success you're finding there at Oaklawn. Tell us about your family. How many kids do you have, and how did you meet your wife?
I met my wife, I think it was in 2013. I talked to her, you know, we didn't start dating until 2014, and we got together, and then we got a child, a little daughter, that she's 20 months right now. Oh. And I met my wife. She used to work for a trainer over here in San Antonio. His name is Ernesto Torres, and she used to run the children for him. And it's how I met her, and we started dating, and we went from there.
What's your daughter's name?
My daughter's name is Serandi. She's it's a little life changing, you know, and something to make you do. I tell you what, having a kid, it changed my life completely. It's amazing. It's amazing. You see life different. It's just amazing. I'm happy the way I am right now with my family. I mean, I just feel so blessed by God, you know, doing what I love to do. Like I say, going around people on the backside, everybody sounds like every day they on a good move. They like family on the backside, you know, everybody talks to everybody, the grooms, everything. It's just amazing to me. It is. I thank God every morning for that, and every race that I ride, I really thank God for that he put that on my way.
So I got to ask you, if your daughter, when she gets older and she goes up to you and she says, Daddy, I want to be a jockey, what would you tell her?
You know, I don't know, to be honest, you know, it's a little dangerous sport, you know, but you know, if she loves it, you know, and she does, you should see the first time I put her on a horse, it's been like around 6 months ago, we go to this field and ride the horses at a farm over there in Jones, Oklahoma, and I put her on this horse, and she grabbed a hold of the reins, as little as she was not scared of the horse. She grabbed the reins, and she would not let him go. We'd trail ride for like 2-3 hours till she got tired to be sitting down. That's when she started, when she let go of the reins, and that's when we stopped, you know. But she sure, she likes it. And if she does like it, you know, all I can do is just encourage her to do whatever she likes to do.
See what happens. Sounds like it's in her blood. Damon, watch out, right? Now, let me ask you this question. If a young aspiring rider were to go up to you and ask you for advice, what would you say the best piece of advice you ever received as far as riding? What would you tell them?
I tell you what, an advice, you know, I feel like pretty young, sometimes they come up and ask me something like that. I had guys that they come, hey, you know, I feel like I'm still green, you know, I feel like I'm learning too, you know. I feel like I'm not old enough to be able to say an advice, you know. The only thing that I can say, you know, is just go with your dreams. If your dream is there, you know, you got to work as hard as you think, as hard as you can to get it, and you get it, you know. If you hard work, I believe this, and it's really true, hard work always pays off. So if you want something on your mind, and it's like a goal for you, if you work hard, you can get it done. That's what I always think, and, you know, I really believe that. If you work hard for whatever what you want, whatever was your goal on your mind, you know, I think if you really work hard for it, you'll be able to get it. So I think if, like I say, I feel green to say something, you know. I feel like green, it sounds like I don't have the experience for that. You know, it's how we call it. I feel green still to say something like to tell somebody an advice, I think.
So then who do you look up to still now? What journeyman riders, what, you know, accomplished rider, riding these days, would you look up to? Would you admire their riding style? Who would that be?
When I was little, I was in Mexico, and we worked at a farm my whole life. I never got on a horse till I was 14 or 15, actually, because they wouldn't let me get on a horse as soon as I got here. So, you know, when I got here, I don't know why I always watch this guy. I watch Calvin Burrell all the time, and he always like it sounds like he gets in the horse, breaks the wind, you know. He always like on a rail, you know. That's why he's Calvin Burrell, right? And I don't know, I always see the guy like, man, you know, I always think this, I wish one day I can be like him, you know, I really do. But a lot of it's just a lot of them, you know. I watch even whatever I'm at, I watch all these writers that I really like. I don't know how to say that. It's a whole bunch of them. If I tell you a list, it's a whole bunch of them. And it's a whole bunch of them that they help me out, you know. Like we got Richard Aramia there. He's like, man, he always tells me, man, you can do it, you know. The guy is like an amazing rider too, you know, and I always see these guys, they like family too, you know.
Shaggy, so, David Cabrera is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, David, I want to go back a little bit now. We have not told yet our audience that you're from Mexico, and I want to tell them how you grew up. And how did you first get introduced to the sport?
Yes, I born in Mexico. My family, we always worked at a farm, hard work, you know. We always have, since I was like eight, I used to work. And we always worked pretty hard, pretty solid. We used to have goats and sheep and cows. And also my daddy, since he was a farmer, we always plant peppers. So we would always, I go watch the sheep, go to school, and then if I have a little time off, I help him with the peppers, you know, and the broccoli and all that. So I worked as far as that. I was even like planting my own when I was like 12, 13, you know. He told me, hey, you can have like a little, like an acre, he said, and you can sell them and you can make your own money. And I was like, man, that'll be great. By that time I also had a couple of goats and this and that, you know. But one day I decided, man, I really want to go to US. my uncle is a quarter horse rider. His name is Marcelino Rodriguez. And I was like, man, I want to go with him. When he was over there, he told me, man, you can make a jockey. He said, use more. And he said, I believe you can make a rider. And I was this kid that I always dreamed big. Since I was little bitty, I was like, at first it was peppers, man, I'm going to plant a whole bunch of peppers and I'm going to grow up these cows and all these, you know. In Mexico, we started working like on really young ages. And I was like, I don't know, it's been like just humble. So when I got here, I started up as a groom. I was 14 and my aunt, she was kind of homeschooling me. Her name is Maury Rodriguez. She's also a trainer over there in Oklahoma. And I was working with these horses, and she taught me a lot, like a whole bunch of para horses. And I get real interesting on them, you know. And I was like, man, I like everything about them. I was a groom. I remember the first time I rode a pony was bareback. And I tell you what, I didn't make it three steps and I fell off. And man, I tell you what, it was like, man, after that, I learned how to ride bareback. I was like, man, he got me off. So I get back on him again. And I think I fall off like two, three times. So after that, I started working. I was working as a groom. And then I got me a job and doing the same thing, homeschooling. By the time I was 15, you know. And it's the way, like, being a groom, I learn a lot about horses. I think I learn a lot, like, a whole bunch of them, you know, how you can make them nervous, how you can get them relaxed. If you're scared, they get scared. If you're nervous, they'll get nervous. Being a groom, I was a groom for, like, 4 years. And I tell you what, I learned so much. And I love my job. I remember when I was a groom, oh, my God, I was like, man, I was like the fastest one on cleaning the stall. I love it. I just love it, being a groom. And at that time, we were working in a farm that we were breaking babies. And I'll tell you what, teaching a horse for the brush and to pick their feet, that's a little something else. It can get pretty interesting. And I like everything, every bit of it. And I was like, when I was a groom, I was like, man, I wish I could be an exercise rider. So one day, my aunt, she decided to put me on these pain horses on the ramping with the little saddle, with the flat saddle. And I started jogging them and learning it, you know, and like, I started, and then I got me like a job galloping and started galloping over there in a little farm in Oklahoma. And like I say, it was breaking babies. Man, we will get thrown down just about every day sometimes, you know. I remember every time when the wind was blowing in the morning, you know, in Oklahoma, the wind blows a lot. I was like, oh, man, I started remembering some of the horses that they can get pretty crazy. I was like, man, I knew I was going to get thrown off, but I was like getting back on. And I still like it, you know. I think I learned a lot by coming off and all that. So after that, I was working with this thoroughbred trainer. Her name is, thoroughbred rider, Cindy Murphy. Back then she was probably Cindy Noel. And I worked for her, and she was like, man, I think you can make it all right as a rider. So she got that on my mind, and I was like, yeah, you know, I wish I can be a rider. At first, as a groom, I was wishing to be an exercise rider. Now I'm an exercise rider. I was like, man, my biggest goal, it was like, man, being a rider. I tell you what, man, wonder what the feeling like. And so anyway, I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. I've already been galloping for like 2 years, you know. By this time, I was already like 20. So I thought, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. So I go to Houston. They gave me my license. And it's the way I started it. I got on, a lady gave me a chance on a horse, you know, like, probably like the way everybody does it. Her name, it was, his name, I remember the horse's name, Almore's Intent. I ran for my first start. He was going a mile on the tour. That was like something else, you know. I was so excited when I finished the race, and especially because I hit the board. I was like, man, I was so happy. And after that, just, you know, they just started giving me some more mounts. We go to Lone Star Park. We rode a few horses there, you know, and then after that, we go to Retama. I finished, I think, second or third on the standings there. And I just like it after that, you know. And I'm always willing to learn, you know. I think on this game, it's like you learn just about every day you learn, you know. It's every day you learn something about the horses every day, because all the horses are different. It's like people, you know. And I believe you can learn something different every day. You know,
so
I've been
true.
Working in, I've been breaking babies for quite, I broke babies for quite a while, and they sure taught me a lot of stuff, I'll tell you that.
Do you think that was good for you, David, starting out and breaking those babies pretty much right off the bat when you were still young as a rider? Was that good for you to learn on young horses?
I believe it is, because when I ride two-year-old races, I feel like I can feel them. I can feel them like, oh, they're scared, you know. It's the first time about everything. And I remember it's like first time we were, even being a groom, I think it helped me. Because I remember them babies, we get them there first, and I try to get, like, where they get, like, confident, where they be like, oh, it's okay, you know. And I think being a groom and being an exercise rider, breaking babies, I think on young babies it helped me a lot, you know, because I think I figured it out a lot, the way kind of, like, maybe the way they think, you know, and make him, like, feel better about it, you know. A lot of horses, they come up nervous sometimes, you know. Sometimes them babies, you know, and I think it did help me to break babies. I really love it, and I think it did help me a lot. To be honest, it did. I think it helped me a whole lot, I believe.
You get a lot of satisfaction out of teaching a young horse, whether you were a groom or a rider or now a jockey, teaching that young horse, and basically they don't know anything. So you have to teach them everything. And is that really satisfying for you to watch a horse develop and grow?
Oh, my God. If you know, this is a good question, because here it is, you know. It's like when you get a green horse, okay. Like, okay, you bring a horse that he don't know nothing. I mean, completely. It's like he don't know the brush, he don't know the halter. He sees you and he'll be like blowing really hard, snorting at you. And then, you know, like as a groom, like a week later, if you work with them every day, they come up to you. And some horses, they get to liking you and they come up to you. That's a great feeling. If you would ever do that, that's just a great feeling, you know. And especially teaching them horse to do everything, you know. And then, you know, because we only had them for like 3 months. By the time that horse leave, I was like, man, I feel like the horse, I was already in touch with the horse. The horse already knew me, I already know him. It was like a lot of satisfaction. I met a lot of horses, you know, and there's some horses that when I was grooming, I still remember them. And sometimes I met some horses that, I tell you what, they never did like me. And I tell you what, they were always trying to kick me. And here it is. It's like a big satisfaction. To, you know, and to break a horse, you know, to teach him to do the right thing, swap your leads, do everything, you know. It's just when you get in a horse, already, okay, the groom already messed with him, you already break him to brush and all this, and then you put the saddle and he goes to bucking, and then a month later, you're already riding him and galloping him, and then once you get their first word, it's just, I tell you what.
David,
like I say, I love my job, and it's just an amazing deal. It is. It's just an amazing.
We got to go and take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit PDJF.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And Swing and Sway looks pretty good in the American Beauty right now. She leads it by three lengths. Scotty's Model and Chanteline second and third. Okie Diva's Between Horses. Swing and Sway took charge at the break, and she is well in front past midstretch. Swing and Sway has opened up a huge lead. What a monster race here. Swing and Sway might win double digits. Maybe Summerhouse might get into second. Swing and Sway dominates. She just never gave him a chance. Swing and Sway won by 8.5. Summerhouse was second, close for third between Chanteline and Barbary Hall.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey David Cabrera. David, we just heard the replay of your victory aboard Swing and Sway in the $125,000 American Beauty Stakes at Oaklawn, and what a dominating victory there, and that was actually your second victory of the day, I believe. And what were you thinking during the race, and what's your opinion on Swing and Sway in her future?
You know, I worked this filly before. I feel like, man, this filly, I feel like she had a lot underneath her, you know. And I was so happy Mr. Ron Mucchetti put me on her. I really appreciate him and the owner for that. And this filly is like very special, you know. She was feeling really juicy on a post-parade. She was, like, not nervous, you know, but she was just, like, ready to roll. I mean, I was like, man, we're ready. I feel I had a lot of confidence on her, you know. Even though it was some really tough horses in there, I was feeling pretty confident because I feel like she had it. I mean, like that day, she was like ready to run. And I know Mr. Mucchetti, he had her ready too. And when I talked to Mucchetti on a paddock, he told me, you know, he said, it's a little speed in here. And I told him, man, it's the way I saw it too. He said, probably just let them two go, a couple of horses in there. And he said, just set third somewhere in there, stay close and improve your position from there, you know, maybe let's see what we can do. He was very confident about this filly. I remember when I talked to him, he said, man, this filly's already, he was really confident, and man, that makes me really happy because I know when as confident as he was, I know how ready she was, you know. So when we were in the gates, this filly, she just set. I mean, we loaded, we didn't last there long, and I mean, as soon as we load, she just set real focus. And when she popped them gates, she popped so hard that I thought, okay, if she wants to go, I'm gonna take it away from you. I know our plans were different, but I thought it's okay. And the whole time I was just like, man, you know, hoping that she'd relax. And she was relaxing the whole way. Since we popped out of the gate, she was just like taking it nice and easy. I was like, man, they must have a lot of horse to catch her because she was, I was like, man, she felt like she was doing it easy. On the end, you know, she just threw off, and she should ran way better than what I thought. You know, I thought we'd win. I feel confident about her, but, man, she really impressed me. She impressed me for sure. She sure did that pretty easily. She went there by quite a few lengths, so I was pretty happy with her.
I would think a bright future ahead for you and Swing and Sway teaming up together, David. And let me ask you this now. You mentioned Ramoquette. He told you to sit behind the speed, and she broke so sharp. She just ran with it. She wanted to take the lead, so you let her. But in the obviously, it worked out for you that day. But in the past, have you been torn when a trainer gives you specific instructions and they want you to come from off the pace or whatever it might be, and the horse is telling you that they want to do something else, What do you go with? Do you go with your gut and your own riding abilities, or do you usually listen to the trainer's instructions, or how do you deal with that?
You know, you can always plan a race. I remember I planned so many races. I'm like, man, this is going to work out. That doesn't normally work. You know, you just got to go by the break. And to me, when a trainer tells me, you know, try to bring them off, you know, is the way the horse likes to run, you know. And I know that once the gates pop, they most of the trainers, they understand, you know, when a horse wants to go like she did, and you let them do it, you know, they normally, they agree with you. They don't really, I don't think I hardly ever had a trainer that would get mad. Only if it's a horse that completely, you know, you got it dragging back, it's a different deal. But when a horse is taking you and is doing it nice and comfortable, you know, they understand and they can see, you know, they can see right off the back if the horse is doing it nice and easy, relaxing, you know. And they don't really get mad. I don't think I ever had a trainer that would get mad at me because a horse would do that, you know. Even though we plan it out different, still, you know, I think they normally, they don't get mad.
You also mentioned, David, that you both thought there was plenty of speed in the race, and you said that was how you saw the race. So you were obviously doing your homework prior to the race. And so tell us, how do you prepare for a race? Do you watch replays? Do you prefer to work a horse before you ride a horse? Tell us what you do.
You know, if it's a horse that I've never been on him, I watch the replays. And I always watch the replays for, sometimes, you know, horses like to come on the inside, they don't mind. And a lot of horses, you know, they don't like to come on the inside. So I try to get, if it's a horse that I already know, I don't watch the replays. But if it's a horse that I don't know or that I just feel like I need to learn something about him, I normally watch my replays. I think it always does me some good when I don't know a horse and I watch the replays. He always does good, I believe that. So that's what kind of what I do, watch the replays. And once I know a horse, like I say, it's okay. I don't really watch much about it, you know.
Jockey David Cabrera joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, David, prior to the break, we were talking about how you got started in the sport and the early days of your career. So let's go back and finish that conversation and tell me when you said you rode your first race on the grass, a route race on the grass. And that's, I know some states, as a 10-pound apprentice anyway, you're not allowed to ride on the grass because it is so much different. You ride so much tighter and it's a little bit more complicated. So take us through that first race, and you said you were excited. Did you feel like you were fit enough? Take us back there.
You know, I always, my main thing, I always, like, I want to be fit all the time. I think even before, when I was going to ride my first race, I remember I called the judge, hey, what you do to be fit, you know? But you can only do so much to be fit. I remember that day, I used to run a lot and lift and do all this and that, and I got so tired. It was a mile, and it was my first race. I tell you what, I had some great friends that they were riders, and once I was on a race, you know, I remember one rider, he kind of got a hold of his horse and he told me, go to the rail. So I thought, yeah, you know, I don't know why, I always like the number one hole, and I always like the rail. So I thought, man, I just go ahead, and I was like, I got on the rail, and I remember what the stewards tell me, no whip the horse too much. So when I was riding, I was thinking, oh, I better not whip it too much because then I get in trouble. I whip it three times. I think there was a pariette, and then I tried to push. And I tell you what, when I was pulling up, I was like, I needed like a tank or something like that to bridge, you know. I got so tired, and today, you know, it was an amazing thing riding on the turf. Everybody talked to me about it, and you know, is there other riders? They were like, oh, man, they put this kid going a mile on the turf. Ooh, I tell you what, everybody, they were like, oh, I don't know about that, you know. For being my first race, you know, it worked out really good. It worked out really good. I was so ready. They always told me, hey, you grab your horse. They were telling me, making sure you got your reins real good and picked up. The first turn, and you these turns are, like, really sharp. You won't feel it. You let him out a little bit, you're going to go out fast. Like, you ain't going to be, like, no works in the morning. If you let your horse, like, lose a little bit on a turn, you probably go all the way down to the fence. So I was like, oh, man, how am I going to be taking these turns, you know? But I was so ready that I was so ready for it. And hearing to them talk, that actually I thought it was easier than what they were telling me, you know. I really didn't thought it was hard, you know. And like I say, I was just so happy. I ran a Ford. I was like, man, I got to get off the horse and take my saddle and wait. It's just a dream come true right there, you know. If I was go by, I didn't win, but it was just a great thing to go over there and wait. And like I say, it was just an amazing thing.
Well, David, how long did it take you before you got your first winner?
Oh, man, I was feeling like I was getting old and I wasn't getting to win my first race. I'll tell you what, I rode, I think, 5 or 6 horses in Sam Houston, and I didn't win a race. I think I ran a second in a third and a fourth, I think, and I was, like, really happy. I was like, yeah, maybe I can get a win. We got the learning start, and I was working hard every day. I was getting ready. I was like, man, I can wait till my first win, you know? Well, anyway, I rode, like, maybe 34 horses, and I was still, I had, like, 10 seconds. And I just had the feeling, man, every time I get so close to win the race, I was always, like, close, and I could not ever get the win. And I was like, man, I was saying, man, did I ever going to win a race? But I was like, everybody told me, it's okay, you run a second, you know, with this long shot. And I was like, yeah, I keep it up. Next time I win with that horse. I always thought that, man, next time I win with that one. So anyway, one day they put me on this filly. Her name was Freaking Reward for Mrs. Joey Salisbury. She's in Houston right now, actually. I just saw her the other day. I had to go and say hello to her. And I remember they put me on this filly and they told me she don't like the dirt too much. But, man, we broke, and this filly, she didn't broke. We were like 50-1, too. I remember we were 50-1. And it was rainy, a little rainy. Man, the filly didn't broke all the short. So I just kind of stay behind, and when I hit for home, I just swing wide. And I tell you what, I win the race, I think, probably about a half length. And when I was pulling up, I was the happiest man. I was so happy. And I was like, man, I can't believe it. I got it. I think I beat it. I was still not sure about it because I went by half a length, and it was my first win. And I had my goggles so full of dirt, so I didn't even know. I was like, man, wonder if I win it. Oh, when I come back, I was a very happy man. I was like, man, I got it. And after that, winners, they just started coming around. You know, I think we had a winner or two every week. Our business pick up a little bit too after getting a lot of seconds and thirds and all that, then winning that race. People was giving me some chances. But I can tell you one thing, I was real happy until I hit the jack's room. I tell you what, right there we got like a tradition where when I left the jack room, I didn't have pretty much any hair left on me. They shave my eyebrows, my hair. It's just like a tradition, you know, they have fun. But it was an amazing thing, I can tell you that. I will never forget that day.
Wow, so I'm very familiar, David. Similar story, when I won my first race, I didn't know if I won. It was a photo. And then you get back to the jock's room and they just throw you with water and baby powder and eggs and everything like that. But they actually shaved your hair, your head and your eyebrows? What?
Oh, my God. They didn't shave my head, but they cut a few hairs on it, you know? They cut a few hairs on it, and they did. They shaved my eyebrows. I remember the next day I had to ride again, and I didn't have no eyebrows. And I was feeling like I had a horse that I really liked, and I thought, man, I'm gonna win this race, and I don't have any eyebrows left. I was like, man. So I go into the bedroom, and I thought, man, I'm gonna put me some eyebrows. I see. I thought, man, I think the girls paint their eyebrows. So I got me a pencil, and I go to the bedroom, and I painted my eyebrows. And when I came back, oh, my God, it was a lord deal. They were laughing at me so hard because I painted my eyebrows. I had to go back and wash them because they were making so fun of me. It was just, you know, I win my first race, and then next day they see me with the paint eyebrows. They just had fun. They had a blast with me, I can tell you that. They sure did. It was a little something else.
That's the best story I've heard about the first win initiation, David. That is too funny. And obviously, you just took off. As you mentioned, that horse paid a big price that day, your first winner ever. And then you were the champion apprentice jockey in 2014 at Lone Star Park. You said the wins just started coming. Did you find it was difficult, though, when you lost your bug? A lot of riders kind of find themselves in a slump when they don't get that weight allowance anymore. Was that hard for you?
You know, a lot of people keep me riding. Nobody changed with me. Everybody keep giving me the same chances. But I can tell you this. I remember one time I win a race when I was an apprentice. 2 weeks before I lost my apprentice, I went with this horse, and I barely win it by like maybe a neck, I think. And I came back then 2 weeks after that and rode the same horse. And I rode exactly the same way, and the race played out exactly the same way as it did. And I tell you this, I lost by a neck. Mm. So, you know, the 5 pounds, I always believe, man, 5 pounds, they are 5 pounds. Because, and here in Texas, it's only 5 pounds. You know, they always give you your bulk, but 5 pounds from when you start to you end. Mm. And it's when I realized, I always thought, 5 pounds, I don't think it's not going to make no difference. It's the same thing. But I can tell you this, 5 pounds is 5 pounds. And I realized it that day. But, you know, we still win with some different horses. We still kept on going. It seems like he didn't stop us, and we got the leading title. You know, we got the leader as an apprentice and also leader as a rider, you know. So that was pretty good, and nothing changed, you know. People keep giving me the same chances. We go to Retama Park. I got the leading title there. We go to Houston, and, you know, we finish second there. So nothing actually changed, you know, only because I can tell some of the horses, they did need it that 5 pounds.
David, what about your weight? Have you ever struggled with your weight, and what do you do? What's your daily schedule as far as diet and exercise, any additional exercise if you do it? What's that like?
I normally don't fight with my weight. I never believe on flipping. I'm big, but I ain't that big. You know, I think I'm a little bit tall, but not that tall, you know, to be doing that kind of stuff. I noticed some riders that they can really struggle with that. Thanks God, you know, I never had. Every time I started riding, I don't like the hot box either. I used it when I was an apprentice, but once I lost it, I never went back then. And I haven't been in the hot box after that. You know, sometimes I go if I'm like sore or I need to warm up my body. But I always, when I started, I always started like 118. The first week of the meet. And then after that, you know, my weight just goes down eventually. Like, I started in Oakland and I was 18. Right now, I think I can do 16. And eventually, it keeps going down and down as far as we go. And I have to work a little bit there, you know, like work out extra hard, you know. No extra hard, but I do have to work just a little bit and watch not to eat too late. I try to eat no later than 5:30, you know, or 6 at the latest. I try to eat kind of early. Sometimes, you know, you can help it when you ride or when you go out with your family, you know, sometimes you can help it. But if I do that, you know, and if I go walk or run a little bit after I eat, I never have no problem with my weight. My weight always stays the same. And like I say, when I switch from one place to the other, I'm always like 118, 119. So it's when I can only do like 118, 119. But as the meat goes on, I get it down low. And when it's warm, when the meat store like in Remington, I got my weight like 116 because it's warm and we work in the morning. So the weight stays pretty good. And like I say, thanks God, I thank him for that I don't have to work, fight my weight.
Do you have to eat certain foods, like a certain diet? Do you stay away from carbs or anything like that? Or can you pretty much eat what you want just in small quantities?
I always think the bread would always make me go up real fast. Bread, and if I try not to drink pop, you know, like soda. I drink one every once in a while, but I try not to drink tea. And because it does, you know. If I just get to eating like a regular person, you know, like, oh, I can eat a hamburger. I can eat three hamburgers today. Tomorrow I have some tortas or tacos or something like that, you know. I go up. And I do. One time I go up pretty high and scare me. And I just, even when I have my time off, I just try to eat the same all the time. And I eat a lot. And but I cook at home, you know. I don't buy like food from outside. I try not to. Only when I go out with my family, I do. But I try to eat a lot at home. And I think that has to do a lot with it. I eat like a lot of salad, and I eat a whole bunch. Even if it's salad or whatever, I eat a whole bunch. I get full as I can, you know. But if I get to eating like I said, like a regular person, I eat pretty much like a regular person, but if I can just eat whatever what I wanted to and drink whatever what I wanted to, it makes me go up pretty fast, and I think it would do that to anybody.
Jockey David Cabrera joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, David, you've ridden at several different tracks. Rotama, you mentioned, Sam Houston, Lone Star, Remington. What other tracks have you ridden at, and what track would you consider your favorite?
I ride also in Sierra Park. I ride at two other racetracks, the day in Louisiana. I can remember this Delta. I rode in Delta, and another one, I believe, is Shreveport. I was there in Triple I Road. And to be honest, you know, my favorite racetrack is Remington Park because I learned how to work a horse there. And I got my first galloper there. And it's my home for me. So pretty much Remington, it is my favorite. Now, as I want to go to as many tracks as I can, you know, I can learn something from every track, from every rider, you know. You can learn something from them every day. But it is my favorite, it is over there at Remington Park.
Now let me ask you this. Do you have a favorite horse? I know you haven't ridden years and years, but do you have someone that you have in mind who's your favorite?
I have, you know, I always had like a lot of horses that they like. I got a feeling, you know, it's like people, you get along really good with people, you know, how sometimes you met them the first time and you feel like they're your friend, you know. I don't know if you ever had the feeling that, man, you know, you can just meet, you know. You rode horses before. I bet you were like, man, I like this horse, and you can feel that the horse like you too.
Yeah.
So I had a horse that I really like. Her name is, I haven't even checked if she still is around, but I can feel that she just like, I just get on her and she feels so confident, and I feel confident about her too, you know. She never gets pressure, she never would be sitting on a gate, she's nice and easy, and the trainer and I, we get along really good. His name was Andrew Concoli, and the horse's name was The Girl and the Song. The Girl in the Song, it was her name. And I tell you what, definitely was a very special horse for me. It was like a horse that I would never forget. And to be honest, it's not like a special horse. Like I say, I like every horse that I ride. I try to get along with all the horses that I ride, you know. And that horse, I don't think, there's one horse that I always remember. Or in my first win, for sure, there's two horses that I always keep on my mind. I had a lot of good horses, you know, but if I tell you, start telling you, I don't think I finish how many favorite horses I have.
Yeah,
but it's wonderful, sure, I can tell you, because yeah, I tell you what, like I say, you get on a horse and you can just feel him, he likes you, and you like him, and so, man, it's just something else, you know. I have some horses that I, we get along so good that when they get to the paddock, they be sweating. By the time that we go starting walking, man, by the time that we hit to the gate, they so dry because we get along really good, you know. I was like, yeah, this my party. I feel like, yeah, this is my buddy. Bring him on.
Love it, David. I know. I wish we had time to talk about all your favorites. Unfortunately, we only have about a minute or so left. But really quickly, describe to us your riding style.
Describe my riding style?
Yes. You like to go to the front, more come from behind?
You know, I always... when I was before, I used to always like to come from off of it. But you know, every horse is different. I don't describe myself because I just go by the way the horse feels like it and what the horse likes to do. So I love to come from off of it. You know, but if it's a horse that likes to go to the lead, like the stake that we win on Saturday, you know, it's just the way he goes. You know, I love to come from behind, but horses, you can change them and you just got to get along with them.
As long as they win, right, David?
Yes, as long as they win, you can change their style. So I think I just ride by whatever what they want to do, you know?
Exactly. Now tell us, David, what's next for you after Oaklawn?
You know, thanks God. Thanks God, and I am so happy we're doing good. You know, I'm thinking about going to Iowa. If somebody comes with a chance to go maybe to Kentucky, you know, it's every rider's name, go to Kentucky, you know. My biggest dream is to be on a Kentucky Derby. So if one day we get a chance to go to Kentucky, if it's this year, we'll for sure take it, you know. But right now it's still pretty early. I'm thinking about doing Iowa. But you never know. Plans can change. We just go one day at a time and we'll see from there.
See what happens, David. Well, look me up if you come to Kentucky. We'd love to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us, David, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. While you are there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, Express Bet Radio, the list goes on. And join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dallapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.